Dr. Jean Chamberlain Froese, the founder of Save the Mothers. Jean is in the pink on the side of the hockey net, and you don't ever want to play hockey against her. My husband has the battle scars to prove it. But this is hockey night in Uganda. Some of the expatriates get together on the campus of Ugandan Christian University there to play hockey. But I was really jealous Dan got to go before me because Dr. Jean was my friend. Jean and I were in the nursery, like the little ones who sat up here, and every Sunday we crawled and waddled out together to nursery care, to Sunday school, and then we went to the same Christian school together. So we spent every Monday to Friday together. And then, I don't know if you did church the way I did church when I was little, but it was all day Sunday. And in between the services, her family and my family went out together for lunch, and we came back for the evening service. And then our youth group met on Sunday evening, so we had youth group together as well. I've been praying for Jean since we were little girls because she said that she wanted to be a missionary in Africa. And I've also been at every one of her fundraisers to raise money for Save the Mothers, another project she was involved with before Save the Mothers. That's the Ugandan countryside by the Nile River there. It's difficult to support something that you only hear about. That's what I found. I was supporting the work of Save the Mothers, but I really didn't know what I was doing with my funds and with my time. Uganda is a country not unlike Canada at all. The population is about the same as ours, size-wise, and they are a very industrious people. They want a better life for their children. However, some things are radically different than Canada, and this is where we change. In Canada, in a not-so-great year, 15 women will die during childbirth or due to pregnancy or afterbirth complications. So that's 15 in a year. But in Uganda, approximately 15 will die every day. And those are only the ones that we know about. They're not the ones, we can't count the ones out in the villages or near the border where there's war. So in all, about 300,000 women will die in 1 year in the developing world from something that is preventable. We have the cure. It's not like cancer. We know exactly what to do so that you are cured from childbirth-related complications. Save the Mothers has started to try and stem the tide of orphans in the developing world. It's really great to support a mom and a family, but it's really wonderful to stop that mom from dying. Because when that mother dies, she doesn't leave one newborn. In the developing world, the average woman is giving birth 6 live children. So if that mother dies on baby 5, she leaves 5 orphans, not one. Dr. Jean works as an obstetrician in Uganda, but if she were able, physically able, to work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, she would put but a small dent in that hole of women dying. All her skill is useless when a woman is not able to go to a clinic for prenatal care. All her skill is useless when the family will not allow the mother to go to a clinic or a hospital at the first sign of a complication. And all her skill is useless when she finally is allowed to go to the clinic, but there's no vehicle available to take her to the clinic. And all Dr. Jean's skill and any other trained obstetrician in Uganda, their skill is useless in the middle of a C-section when the generator dies, or when someone forgets to purchase gas for the generator, and so they are unable to do the C-section properly or do the C-section at all. Or when maybe everything's working fine, but the blood supply is now tainted because someone didn't keep an eye on the refrigerator temperature. So instead of delivering babies around the clock, Dr. Jean was able to partner with a Ugandan obstetrician. This is Dr. Florence Marembi, and she's just retired, but she still works about 60 hours a week. And they decided that it would be more efficient to start a master's program in public health leadership for Ugandan professionals. And they started this small picture here of the university in Makono, Uganda, Ugandan Christian University. And this is one of the classroom sets where Dr. Gina and my husband were photographed out the front. We stayed in the university's guest house when we went, and we enjoyed Ugandan chai tea as often as we could get it. And we attended a faculty dinner. These are all professors that teach in the Save the Mothers program. So when you support Save the Mothers, you're helping to pay a bit of their salary. But unfortunately, the salaries that they get through our program just cover their travel to and from where they live to the university. They don't own cars. That is an extravagance they can't have. Even as doctors and nurses and lawyers and MPs, they can't afford their own car. So they have to take public transportation to the campus. And by the time they pay for their transportation, they're not growing rich on the salary that they're given. Many professional people take the programs, lawyers, journalists, MPs, MPPs from all over Uganda. And just as of a year and a bit ago, people from East African countries also started coming to Ugandan Christian University. My family is grateful that we were supported in prayer by our church because, of course, when we went there, we got sick. What else is new, right? You go away, everything's different. You do your best to only drink bottled water. You're eating wonderful food, but we still manage to get sick. And my youngest daughter, Taylor, who was with us, became violently ill, not to the point of hospitalization, but just great discomfort, if you know what I mean. And of course, our physician had given us some antibiotics, and she was able to take them, and she was able to manage the rest of our grueling schedule. And when we changed planes in Heathrow, we were able to give her some TLC. But unfortunately, at the same time as Taylor became ill, I started getting some very sharp pain in my kidney. And I'd never had pain there before, but I knew what it was the minute it came. And I said, oh dear God, please don't let me go to a Ugandan hospital. I know we support the work there, but I think I'll just die of fright if I walk inside, because I had seen them. And so I took some Advil, and miraculously the pain subsided until I got home. And in the middle of the night, the first night, I was in emergency, yelling like a banshee with 5 bags of morphine up to a drip, and I had an acute and severe kidney infection. But all this to say, I wouldn't let my dog go into a Ugandan hospital. They have great doctors and great nurses, but it's not up to our standard. My life has been changed by going to Uganda. Do we have potholes in this town? We have potholes where I live just south of Barrie, and I drive into Toronto quite frequently. And the potholes here are about the size of a pot, right? That's why we call them potholes. Well, I can't look at the potholes in Canada now without laughing, because in Uganda, they're not the size of pots. They should be called elephant holes. And when they flood with water, they're the size of what a farmer might call a pond. So you can imagine in the middle of the night trying to go to a hospital on a road without streetlights like that. So I've just found for me that when I go to Emerge Now or to a doctor's visit with my children and I wait in the walk-in clinic line for 90 minutes and then I hear the consult with the specialist is 6 weeks, I've learned to keep my mouth shut and to stay quiet because we are so lucky we have our healthcare system here. I'd like to show you some of the things we did in Uganda so that you'll see why my life has been changed. And I want to highlight 2 events. Sorry there. I think maybe I'm missing one. But we got to attend Ugandan Christian University's graduation. And these students here graduated from a cohort. And as you can see, if you can look closely there, when I say students, we all tend to think 18 and 19-year-olds. But these students are professionals. They are in their 40s and 50s. They have a great influence in their country because of their age and their position. They graduated and they all brought their families. Some of them traveled 3 days by motorbike to get to their graduation. They were so pleased, and so we had a little party for them. This is what the Ugandan hospital looks like. Sorry, I was trying to find that earlier. That's a typical labor and delivery ward in Uganda. We arrived in Uganda 2 days after traveling on the planes, and that is what you look like when the bright Ugandan sun hits your face and you've been in a plane for 16, 17 hours. And we were taken immediately to a school. We got off the plane, we had a 2-hour ride to the university, and we showered as fast as we could, and we got ready to go to a school. One of the things that the Save the Mothers students do while they're in the program is use their skill to teach students about maternal health. So this is the group of students plus Dr. Jean and an intern from Canada, Zoe. Zoe just graduated from McMaster and didn't know what to do next, so she came for 10 months to Uganda to help in the Save the Mothers program. And at the school, we heard some questions that were very disturbing. You see, they're not as open as we are about reproductive health. And so the students were too timid to ask simple and typical questions that our maybe grade 7 and 8 students would be familiar with asking in a reproductive health class. So the students wrote their questions down anonymously on a piece of paper and submitted them so that the Save the Mother students could answer them. And one of the students asked a question that struck my daughter and I. She said, "I don't know what to do. Last week you said that if somebody was physically or sexually abusing me, there was a special officer in each police detachment who I could come and speak to, and I could say I am being sexually abused, and this is who the perpetrator is, and that that police officer would help me." And you see, the problem is this: the person who's abusing me is my brother. And my brother is a professional, and he pays my school fees. So if I report him, and he is arrested, then who will pay my school fees? I'm 16. I'll have to drop out of school. There aren't many options for women if they want to work and provide for their families. So she knew where that would lead her by being a dropout. This is the school that we went to. It actually was pretty good shape. The rafters were rotting. There were no screens on the windows. It was very hot inside, and children were crammed into this school, but they were very eager to learn. But I want you to see if you can pick out the young girl. She's got her shoulders back, and she has a gray T-shirt on. And I used to teach high school, and she was really typical to all kids, even in Canada. She was very surly. She didn't want to look us in the eye when we were speaking. But as my daughter and I were leaving the school, she came up to us with her arms linked with her friends. You know, girls approach you in a unit. They never approach you on their own. They always go to the bathroom in a pack. And this young girl came with her friends, and I was kind of taken aback because she didn't look like she had been interested in us talking. So I was somewhat surprised. So she said, she was the leader, she said, "Where are you from?" So I told her. She said, "Do you have other children?" And I said, "Yes, I have 3. "Only 3? Why?" She was quite surprised that we had such a small family. And then she giggled, and some of her friends now had made a semicircle around us. And my daughter reported to me later, "Mom, did you see what they were doing?" And I said, "No, I was so excited to be talking to this young lady." She said, "Mom, they were touching my skin, and they were running their finger through my blonde ponytail and feeling the straight hair. It was their first contact with someone so close that was a little different than them." And then this little girl, before she had the whole pack turn around and walk away, she said, "Never forget us." And I can't forget her. How do you forget this young lady or an encounter with this young woman? Because if Uganda doesn't change, she will probably die in childbirth. and her whole future is ahead of her. She told us she was 19. It was taking her a while to complete school because she had to drop out when there wasn't money available for school fees. We caught a glimpse of this little shy girl, and women in Uganda are very shy. They are kept at home and kept protected by the family, whereas the boys are much more outgoing. And we wonder, you know, if this little girl's future will be bright. We wondered if she had a mom, or was she living with her aunties? Was she living with extended family? Was she shy because she saw my daughter and I together, and I was a little protective of my daughter, and maybe it made her wonder. I wonder if someone would protect me if my mother had stayed. And then she waved that beautiful smile. After the high school the following day, we went to see one of the Save the Mothers hospitals. And this is a model hospital. There are four model hospitals that when you give to Save the Mothers, your money goes directly to helping. They are run by the Ugandan government, but like many governments, including Canada, corruption is rampant. So even though if you were a professional and 40% of your income went to taxes, you would not see roads, you would not see free schools, you would not have beautiful hospitals. Well, this hospital is a model hospital in the making. And I say that because my daughter and I were so shocked when we went in and we were like, this is a model hospital? But it had changed in the last year significantly, and those changes we couldn't see. We just compared it to what our emergency rooms would look like. Roosters are all over the courtyard. They walk in inside the hospital, so it's not quite like one of ours. But we've partnered with these hospitals over 5 years to change things. They may be cosmetic, like butterflies on the wall and paint, and trolleys for the nurses to keep their medication and gauze in, because it was very inefficient. They couldn't afford a trolley, so they had to keep walking back to the room where they kept their supplies. So some of the Save the Mother's money went to trolleys to help. But the cosmetic changes are nice to see. But what's more important is that outcomes have changed. Women are going into labor and surviving the experience, not getting postpartum infection as well. Families have to come to visit, like this little family here. Families also are very needed, because these are not staff at the hospital doing laundry. These are sisters, daughters, aunties, and grandmas who do each patient's laundry. You must come with a family member. They also do all your cooking and personal body care. They have to climb up this hillside to a water pump to get water to do the laundry by hand. And these are what the conditions inside the hospital looked like originally, before they were kind of fixed up a little bit. We liked this picture because we were so excited. It's a real huge task to get clean running water, potable water for a facility. So you can imagine the nurse would check you. Women, you know what's involved in that when you're checked when you're in labor and delivery. And your nurse, of course, doesn't have gloves because we're in a country where those are expensive. So the only way she can not pass infection is to wash her hands with soap and water. So she goes to non-potable water. Dirty water. She doesn't have soap. She washes her hands. She goes to the next person and passes infection. So we partnered with a group called H2O, or Water for All, and they brought in potable water to this hospital here and the four others as well. So now the nurses can wash their hands. We also provide soap. They can wash their hands with soap and scrub their hands. And one bonus the nurses said to us, matron said, do you know what's so nice in the middle of the night? To just make a cup of tea and know you won't die from the cup of tea. So they have a little something extra for themselves and for their patients as well. So outcomes have changed. So these kinds of scenes are what we get to see now in this hospital. Mummy's in the blue, and she's passing her baby daughter to her eldest daughter. to hold on to. The other lady and baby in the picture are the aunt and the nephew of the woman who's just given birth. So this young lady has her mummy to look after her. More pictures of mothers with babies. And some of the women now that I'm going to show you in a row, every single one of them came in to our hospital too far along to deliver a baby naturally. They needed to have a cesarean section. If they were in the countryside, they would have bled to death. They were able to get a C-section, but they also needed some intravenous fluids that would stop hemorrhaging or bleeding to death in the C-section. So my daughter was presenting this woman. The ladies in our church made receiving blankets and little baby hats, so everyone got one while we were there in exchange for letting us take their picture. So this beautiful baby, he looks about 6 months old. That mom was not delivering him naturally. She had to have a C-section, and he was baby number 5. She had undiagnosed diabetes during her labor, so both her and the baby became too large. This woman, I'm sorry the picture's a little shiny, but I had to show you, when we walk on Mother's Day for Save the Mothers, we don't do what this lady did justice here. This woman went into labor. It was her second baby. And her mother-in-law, after day one, said, no, you don't need to go to the hospital. The other two were normal deliveries. By day 3 of active labor, that was not productive. Her mother-in-law finally said, okay, you can go. And mother-in-law had the purse strings. So the mother-in-law is standing in the blue there. She said, you can use some of this money to get you to the hospital. This woman had to get into a minivan. And that's what a public bus is in Uganda. Now, a minivan, if you think of, I had a Ford Windstar when my children were young. Take out all the seats and put in wooden planks so that you could get about 22 people inside. So in active labor, at day 3 of active labor, she got into this minivan. She had a 20-minute drive to the coast. She got out of the minivan and climbed into a dugout canoe. The canoe was over an hour and a bit across Lake Victoria. She got into another public minivan. It took her 3 hours to get to the hospital. We spoke to her nurse and her doctor. They decided when she arrived that she had less than a 10% chance of living. She was filled with infection. They couldn't get the baby's heart rate. And they had to almost toss a coin. Do we use our limited funds to help this woman who will probably die? So they did. They decided to do it. And she lived. This is day 3. Her and the baby both had, she had an emergency C-section. They're both on antibiotics, IV antibiotics. Little baby has a little bandage on his hand. They just took his IV out as well. And he lived, and she's going home to 2 other babies because of the work of Save the Mothers at this hospital and the great Ugandan obstetrician who decided to try and save her life. And I couldn't resist putting this picture in. We've heard a lot in our country about Rwanda. This young lady and her mother are from Rwanda, and they were looking for work in Uganda when the little girl, and I call her little girl, I'm sorry, she's 17, she's a little girl to me. She was raped, and she became pregnant. And at approximately, they figure 24, 26 weeks, she went into premature labor. And she came to our hospital, and we're very thankful that she did, because she needed to have an operation. She needed to be put on antibiotics. Because you see, if she had not gone to a hospital, she may have bled to death at that point in time, at least got an infection. And if she had gone, we were told, if she had gone to the hospital down the street run by the government, their way of looking after her would have been to give her a hysterectomy at 17. And in Uganda and most of the developing world, a woman is valuable because she can reproduce. And if she couldn't reproduce, her chances of getting a provider, a husband, would have been very low. And so this young lady's future is quite bright because she received proper care at the hospital. We also spoke, this was a new standard that the hospital decided to do. Do you know where she is right now? Can you tell by the butterflies behind? She's in the labor and delivery ward. She's miscarried a baby, and she's been put on a floor, a ward, with mothers and newborn babies. If you've miscarried before, you know that the last thing you want to hear is the sound of a crying newborn baby. So we spoke with the matron, and the matron said, I never thought about her feelings. That's not because she's cruel or callous. She's just so overworked. She'd never thought that this young woman or any other woman before her would feel her heart being ripped apart because she doesn't have a baby in her arms. She's going home from the hospital empty-handed. So they decided, well, after that picture was taken, to move her to the general surgery ward so that she wouldn't hear the cries of the newborns down the road from her there, or down the hallway from her. There were about 65 women in the ward that day. About 15 or so were in active labor and were laboring. The ward had never been that full before, Dr. Jean told us. And what we realized is the word is getting out. It's like great gossip, good gossip. The word is getting out to the women in the capital city that if you come to this hospital, you're walking out the door on your 2 feet. You're not going out in a box. So this ward was filled with mums and aunties who brought their laboring family members here to have a successful delivery. And that's what I was waiting for the whole time, to hold a beautiful newborn. This is a baby boy. Ugandans love bright and colorful colors, so many of the little boys, the mothers were picking pink blankets for them, and we were thinking, no, you want blue, and nope, they wanted nice bright colors. And this is a little boy. He was quite the size. He'd just been born that morning. It was about 11 o'clock in the morning when I got to hold him. And so because the hospital is changing, these are the kind of outcomes that mums can expect. Or if you go to the hospital and all of a sudden there's two babies, not one baby. This mother said she was in complete shock when she delivered a second child, a healthy, beautiful baby. They're about close to 6 pounds each there. So these are the kinds of outcomes that can be expected when the hospital is up to maybe a bit more of our standards and has our help to get there. The Ugandans want their women to live, so I hope I haven't changed anything there. I hope you understand that. They want their women to live. In fact, while we were in Uganda, an aid worker came to us from Sierra Leone, and he said for 5 years he's tried to get into a strong-held Muslim area to help them with maternal health. And just that day, or I guess maybe that the day before, he'd been contacted by the village elders in Sierra Leone via the wonderful thing of a cell phone, because they had a cell phone and he had a cell phone, and they said, please come and help us. Our women are dying. They can't keep their women alive. So they were going in, and this man is a professor with Save the Mothers, so we can hardly wait to hear the stories that he tells us, because a village midwife with the right skill, of course, can deliver a baby quite well. She'll know the standard procedures that maybe our midwives here in Canada use. And I'm a midwife mother. I had two babies at home with a midwife, and I know that their care is amazing. So if the midwives or traditional birth attendants in rural areas are trained properly, then women will live, and so will their children. I want to link this back, just as I close, to the verses that you saw on the screen earlier, the verses of Hagar. I think as a church, we often focus on the story of Abraham and Sarah, and we forget that young disenfranchised handmaiden from Egypt named Hagar. And I'm always shocked when I read these words, the story of, well, how God looked after Hagar. Because we think about God providing Isaac, and then that Isaac was the seed of promise, not Ishmael. But those words in Genesis, it said God saw the plight of the pregnant Hagar. She ran away because Sarah mistreated her. God saw her, and he acted mightily to save her. He provided for her. Genesis 16 tells us that Hagar called God the one who sees. And today we've seen these photos. So I wonder what we can do to change the life of a mother in the developing world. Like us, God also heard the plight of a baby crying. God heard Ishmael by himself. His poor young mother set him down in the shade of a tree, and she walked away because she didn't want to hear him anymore. She didn't want to hear him crying and then hear him not crying. And we are told that God heard the cries of baby Ishmael, and then God acted mightily to save by providing miraculously a stream where his mother could get water and be nourished. We've heard these stories of mothers in Uganda today, and like God, we can act mightily to do something to change the lives of these women in Africa. Will you pray with me? Heavenly Father, may we be your eyes and ears here on earth to redeem our fallen world. May we do something about what we have seen and heard today so that mighty steps are taken to save the lives of mothers in the developing world. Amen.